What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
With the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Yes, welcome back to the broadcast. We are looking live from the Star in Frisco, Big 12 Media Days. My man BK and Trey just got done talking with Joe Klatt. We'll get into that conversation a little bit. I think Joe Klatt brought up some very interesting things. Joe Klatt didn't say it. He's backtracking a little bit because he tweeted out earlier this year that he picked Texas to win the Big 12. So he backtracked a little bit when he was on there. Nothing wrong with that. All right, I'm a Texas DB. I'm part of DBU, so I know how to backpedal, and I do it as well as anybody out there. All right, good technique, keep my shoulders over the knees, keep it low, so I know how to backpedal. Joe Klatt did it really well, but I think he brought up some really good points. He actually talked to the guys, and he said, listen, if you were in Vegas, you were a betting man, and pretty soon you ain't going to have to go to Vegas to place a sports bet, baby. It's about to be legal everywhere. If you're placing a sports bet on the Big 12, to who you're picking to win the Big 12, man, this year, I got to tell you, it'd be really tough. And there are a lot of dark horses right now in the Big 12. I think that's why people are a little bit split on who's going to win the Big 12, who's going to take charge of the Big 12. Because, you know, right now, if you look at it, TCU can be considered a dark horse, which is crazy because it's TCU, one of the most consistent programs in the country. Oklahoma State, also one of the most consistent programs in the country the last few years, can end up being a dark horse to win the Big 12. Oklahoma's the favorite, of course. Hell, Texas right now is considered a dark horse to win the Big 12. You're talking about blue blood. Oh, they could sneak in and win the Big 12. You know what I mean? So it's one of those years. K-State, you can never count out the Purple Kryptonite and the Purple Wizard. Never. He brought two quarterbacks to the Big 12 media days. Two of them. All right. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. That's either really good or really bad. All right. It's like having two women in your life. It's really good or really bad. It can go really good. For a while, you're like, man, this is great. Two women. One cooks for me. One, I get cleans up the house for me. Man, two women is great. And then when it implodes. And that could happen to K-State. But K-State brought two quarterbacks to the Big 12 media days. Hell, most teams didn't bring one. Texas didn't bring one. Oklahoma didn't bring one. I think Iowa State brought their quarterback. West Virginia brought their quarterback. And K-State brought two quarterbacks. So in all, there are only four quarterbacks here. That is part of the uncertainty right now in the Big 12. You're talking about a conference that has been pretty much predetermined year to year based on who has the most experienced quarterbacks. And this year, the second most experienced quarterback in the Big 12, I BS you not, is Sam Ellinger. Guy started six games last year. He's the second leading returning passer in the Big 12. Think about that. Real Greer hadn't even started an entire season, and he's projected to be a first-round pick next year, but he's the best quarterback and the most experienced quarterback coming back to the Big 12. And yet that guy hasn't even started an entire season. So that's the fun of the Big 12. Some people don't like this uncertainty. I think it's great. I think it's really good for the Big 12. And, you know, even Texas Tech, I know this sounds crazy. Texas Tech potentially could have the best defense in the Big 12 this year. It's something we've never seen. It's something we never even would have imagined. That's like some people saying Donald Trump was going to be president 10 years ago. You're like, man, that's crazy. That's wacky. All right, that is asinine. That is ludicrous. Texas Tech this year could end up having the best defense in the Big 12. And I'll tell you something, and I think we can all agree with this. Cliff Kingsbury is one of the best offensive minds in college football, has been for the last few years. And I don't care who Cliff Kingsbury's quarterback is, who he chooses, he's got the magic touch when it comes to quarterbacks. All right? That guy knows quarterbacks, period. All right? If Cliff Kingsbury likes you as a quarterback, if I was a coach in college football, I would just track who Cliff Kingsbury likes as a quarterback, and I'd go recruit that guy because he knows what he's doing when it comes to quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield was once one of his quarterbacks. Davis Webb was once one of his quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes was once one of his quarterbacks. That guy, hey, look what he did with Johnny Manziel. That guy knows what he's doing when it comes to quarterbacks. So I don't care who Cliff Kingsbury picks this year as his quarterback. It's an insert quarterback here offense for him. So Cliff is going to have a good offense. But if it's possible for Texas Tech to have the best defense in the Big 12 this year, they do have three players picked on the preseason All-Big 12 defensive team. That's the first time I think of in Texas Tech history that it's happened in the Big 12. I could be wrong. Some Red Raider come up here, pistols firing, and come let me know if I'm wrong. They've had as many preseason defensive selections this year as they've had in the last 9 years combined. So if I told you right now that Texas Tech is going to have a better defense than Oklahoma, you got to say it out loud for it to come to fruition, to try to make it sound real to you. Texas Tech's going to have a better defense than Oklahoma. It's possible. Because people are talking about how Oklahoma's defense is struggling. If that is the case, and Texas Tech is going to have the best defense that they've had in the Big 12 since its inception, then you have to throw them in the conversation as a dark horse too. Because Cliff Kingsbury is going to put out a top 15 offense. You know they're going to score points. If they can stop somebody, that's never really happened. Texas Tech has never had the best defense in the Big 12. Never, ever. And this is the first time that it may happen in Big 12 history. It is a bizarro world. And Oklahoma's got zero players on the preseason defensive list. It's really, really just a crazy, kind of bizarre Big 12 year. So I'll throw in, of course, Oklahoma can win the Big 12. Of course, Texas can win the Big 12. TCU, Oklahoma State. K-State with the purple kryptonite we've covered. Some people like Iowa State because of the way they ended the year and because everybody loves Matt Campbell, who's a fantastic young head coach. Some people threw Iowa State in there because they actually do have their quarterback. There's some people that don't know who their quarterback is. Most people in the Big 12 don't. They're in a quarterback competition. Hell, at least Iowa State has Kyle Kemp. They know who their guy is going forward. So they got Kyle Kemp. Will Greer, he's the best quarterback in the Big 12, so West Virginia's got to be thrust into that conversation too. So now we got Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, K-State, Iowa State, and West Virginia. Hell, the only people that don't have a chance to win the Big 12 are Kansas, that pile of crap out there. Right? Baylor, because, I don't know, the football guys are not going to let Baylor win the Big 12. It's just not going to happen. It ain't right. I not believe in that. And... you know, I think, you know, after that, I think that right there is the only team that really got no shot at all. Some, like I said, some people are really high on Iowa State with the way they ended the year. So potentially 7 to 8 teams are going to be able to win the Big 12 this year. And, you know, I was thinking about this on the way in. Because it's, you know, the Big 12, it's a relatively young conference. And we'll get into the health of the conference because... you know, they were kind of the state of the Big 12 address that'll come up during Big 12 Media Days as well, which talks about a lot of different issues. And we'll talk about the health and the overall wellness of the Big 12 conference a little bit later on. But I'll say this, and getting back to Texas, trying to make it specific here, go from macro to the micro. I do think there are going to be three storylines this year that are going to determine how the football season goes for Texas. Now, I could get into the minutiae, and we can get into the little details, and we can go blow by blow a little bit later on. We got plenty of time for that leading up to the football season. But I'll give you the overall kind of Cliff Notes version of what are going to be the most important factors for Texas this year. It's going to be the quarterback, number one. I'm not telling you something you don't already know. It's going to be how well that defense improves considering the losses. And we'll go over how important that is a little bit later on. I got the numbers. I've crunched them. And number three, and this may end up being the most important storyline of the year. Is Tom Herman going to call the plays? Because one thing you'll notice about the Big 12 conference, it's an offensively prolific conference. It is year after year the most offensive prolific conference in the country, and there's no question about it. And the reason is it has the best and brightest offensive minds. It's the youngest conference. If you go average age of the head coach, it's the youngest. Why? Because young head coaches are innovative. They're progressive. They're on the cutting edge. All right, and most of that is geared toward the offensive side of the ball. So there are a ton of coaches in the Big 12, these innovative young guys, and one of them is one of my best friends in the world, Kyle Shanahan. So I talk to him about this all the time. There's this new movement, and I don't know if it's a new movement, hell, it may be kind of a throwback movement that is now becoming more and more popular. These young, innovative minds, they want a direct line to the quarterback. They don't want an offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coaches clouding the message, potentially getting things that are lost in translation. All right, when it comes to the source of the offense, the offensive innovation, and then the person who's going to execute on the field, which is the quarterback. So if you'll notice, in the, you know, in the Big 12, a lot of coaches calling plays, probably more so than any other Power 5 conference, Big 12 head coaches call plays. Now, Mike Gundy used to do it and decided, you know what, I couldn't do it. You know why he stopped doing it? Because he hired Dana Holgorsen. He hired one of the best offensive minds in college football to be his offensive coordinator. And since then, Mike Gundy has relinquished a lot of that control. But David Beatty, Dana Holgorsen, Cliff Kingsbury, Lincoln Riley, Gary Patterson, and he's on the defensive side. And then you have, of course, like I said, Mike Gundy, he used to be on that side. Now he has come back to the pack. But half the coaches in the Big 12 call their own plays. And a lot of Longhorns fans believe, and I think we may get there too, that's going to end up being six by midseason because Tom Herman's going to end up calling the plays. Now, there's a good and a bad side to this. If Tom Herman is calling the plays next year at any point, the fit has hit the shan. Something went wrong. Something he didn't anticipate. Because he got Tim Beck there. He hired Herb Hand, who's got play calling experience. He's got Drew Maringer there, who's kind of the guy there developing and bringing up in that mold. If you got to go through all those stop gaps, all right, and you got to go through plan A, plan B, plan C. Tom Herman calling plays is like plan D. That means, man, that first half of the season when you got to play TCU and K-State and that purple kryptonite, and then you got USC and Maryland and Tulsa, something went wrong early on. I would rather have, and I've said it all year long, I'd rather have what Tom Herman does not end up calling the plays, because if that is the case, then his plan has worked. His vision has actually worked, that Tim Beck is now kind of figured out the offensive identity for Texas and how to utilize and maximize the weapons. That, to me, is best-case scenario. That's when Texas is going to win 9-10 games. If Tom Herman's calling the plays, Texas is a 7-win team, maybe 6 wins, because that means he's got to come save Texas. And ironically, he was brought here because of his offensive expertise, his offensive acumen. He was brought in here literally to call these plays in an offensively centric conference like the Big 12. So that's the big storyline, because that means that Sam Ehlinger's not playing well. Shane Buechele's not playing well. You know what I mean? Like, for Tom Herman to have to call these plays, that's a lot of things that have happened and that have happened to negatively for Texas. I'd much rather have what Tom says. He's just living. He's chewing gum on the sidelines. He's happy. He's maybe starts doing a little dance that he did during the Texas Bowl. I'd much rather have that Tom Herman than the Tom Herman who's got a call plays and got the clipboard and everything. Now, I know that is the trend in the Big 12, and I'll get into why that's the case. But I'm telling you that if Tom Herman's calling the plays, that's going to be a big story, because if Tim Beck ends up, you know, being a relatively competent offensive coordinator, and the offense is progressing and it's on the right trajectory, we never have to deal with that storyline again. But that storyline ain't going nowhere. So to me, that's big, because if the offensive identity crisis that has plagued Texas continues in the most offensively prolific conference in all of college football, the Big 12, that's a problem. The defense can only carry so much. You don't have long ball Dixon anymore to win that field position battle, flip the field every damn time, you know what I mean, so that you actually, your offense is working at an advantageous position and you put their offense at a disadvantageous position. You're not going to have that advantage anymore, that luxury. But I'll tell you something why I think, though, that you're having more and more offensive coordinators, head coaches in the Big 12 that are calling the actual plays, and that they don't want a filter. They don't want anything in between themselves and the quarterback. The quarterback position, as we all agree, is tougher to play than it ever has been. They're actually putting more and more responsibility on the quarterback than they ever have, even in the air raid offense. That's why when the head coaches from the NFL and all the scouts from the NFL went to Oklahoma to look at Lincoln Riley's offense, to say, all right, what is Baker Mayfield doing? What is he reading? What is his pre-snap reads? What's he looking at? What's his checkdowns? What are the audibles? Let's go find out how this offense works to find out if this guy is running some immature, rudimentary offense that anybody could run. What they found out was that the offense was way more complicated than they had ever known, because they never dived into the air raid. They believed all the stereotypes about the air raid. Oh, the air raid, it's just a BS offense. It's relatively simple. It's too simple. It's one of those offenses that is easy to figure out. It has all its limitations. What they didn't account for was evolution. And in the Big 12, you've had this ecosystem where the air raid has been able to evolve into this monster and all these different variations of it. Dana Hoges has got his variation of it. You know, Texas Tech, Cliffy's got his variation of it. Lincoln Riley's got his variation of it. There's a great story. Michael Lombardi actually was talking to Luke Falk, a Mike Leach quarterback from Washington State. And he tweeted out, a team asked Luke Falk who calls the run plays at Washington State. And Falk said, head coach Mike Leach only calls passes. All the runs are done as checks at the line of scrimmage. Check with me. So the quarterback essentially is killing plays at the line of scrimmage to, you know, to basically determine pre-snap read what they're going to run. And the coaches in the NFL were amazed at this. They go, oh, air raid quarterbacks are killing plays at the line of scrimmage? Yeah. Yeah, it is a much more evolved and a much more intricate quarterback strategy that the air raid has. And they're learning this now because now they're drafting air raid quarterbacks high. Patrick Mahomes, number one, air raid quarterback from Cliffy, Kingsbury. Remember we used to disrespect those quarterbacks? Oh, man, those Tech Deck quarterbacks, man, they ain't worth nothing. They just get stats in college. Them boys can't play at the next level. Why are the NFL scouts now drafting them high? Baker Mayfield, air raid quarterback, twice, by the way, with Cliffy Kingsbury, Texas Tech, then goes to Lincoln Riley. Hell, he's got air raid roots written all on him, drafted number one overall. Because now they just figured out, oh, man, I can use these quarterbacks. I just have to hybridize the schemes. I can't be stubborn about how I use these guys. I gotta bring those elements from college to the NFL game. Bill O'Brien learned it, too, with Deshaun Watson last year. Bill O'Brien said, man, Deshaun Watson taught me more about the spread than I had ever known about it. Deshaun Watson on the board teaching, oh, no, coach, we can do it like this. See, that's simple right there. You ain't got to make it complicated. He's like, oh, man, you're so right. Same thing happened with Shanahan when they brought in RG3 and Art Briles came up there and opened up their playbook to him. They're like, oh, this is how we need to do it. So the air raid is infiltrating the NFL. And what people don't really know is every Leach quarterback, and my man Chris B. Brown at Smart Football has this anecdote via Twitter. Every Leach quarterback has a story about being yelled at for not changing a play at the line of scrimmage that Leach called because he wants them to take ownership of the offense. So he'll call a play, and if you don't change his play, he'll cuss you out. I called a play. Well, you should have seen the pre-snap read and then noticed that the safeties were, you know, that they were shifting and it was going to be one deep instead of two deep, and you should have changed the play because he wants them to take ownership of the offense, which is why, think about it. Why are all the quarterbacks for Mike Leach such great offensive coordinators and such great head coaches? He empowers them. He empowers his quarterbacks. It's your game. That's why Lincoln Riley, Leach quarterback. That's why Cliff Kingsbury, Leach quarterback. I think Graham Harrell's like the North Texas offensive coordinator. All these guys from that Leach tree end up being – Josh Heupel is kind of from that air raid Leach tree. They end up being really good coordinators because the air raid actually does empower. We used to, it's the misnomers about it. And now the NFL is starting to figure it out. So in the Big 12, getting back to why these head coaches are calling the plays, the quarterback position is more difficult to play than ever before. Now you're empowering these guys. You have them doing so much on the field. They're essentially you are remaking. Coach Akin used to have a great saying about his DBs. He said, "I'm going to break you down, and I'm going to rebuild you in my own image on the field. You're going to be a little me out there playing." You don't think like me. You're going to see things like me, except you're going to be way more athletic and faster, and you're going to be able to make them plays. I can't do it. And essentially, that's what he did. So we started to think like a coach on the field. He wanted all his players thinking like coaches, alignment, assignment. What does this formation mean, and what route concept can come out of this formation, all that kind of stuff. He's the reason I have football IQ to this day. Same thing is happening with the quarterback, which is why in the NFL, you know, now in the NFL, more head coaches are calling offensive plays and defensive plays than ever before in the history of the game. You got to go back to when the NFL was initially created, to go back to when head coaches were actually calling plays, or the largest percentage of head coaches were calling his plays as frequent as they do now. Because back then, hell, you was the head coach, you was the offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, you was the water boy, you was a trainer, you was every damn thing back then. Hell, they didn't have such elaborate support staffs as they do now. So, you know, now you have that kind of thing happening where you can end up, and that, I think that's what's fairly interesting. Oh, and I think we've been joined right now, all right, by a special guest. So I'm just going to shut up and
How's it going, man?
I'm doing great.
You may not remember me, but you've given me fits over my career having to play against you when you played for Mac.
Coach. I appreciate that. I'm just somebody that still remembers me for football, my football career, not this radio stuff, Coach. Yeah, back in the day, I was a good player.
I can vouch for you. You were really, really good. Really, really good, man. And it was fun watching you play back in the day.
All right, well, for those who don't know, Coach David Beatty joining us right now. You are doing your best to turn around this Kansas program. Talk about what's been the biggest challenge for you so far trying to turn around Kansas football.
Well, you know, there's several things that all of us face. It's not just me, but one of the things that I think we really have tried to do a really nice job of is retaining the players we got. One of the major things for us was facing a little bit of a deficit, or a large amount of a deficit, was we first had to retain players, because every time you didn't retain one, it exponentially affected you. You lost that player, and you lost that initial, and you lost that body. And all that did was put you in a deeper hole. So we had to be really, really smart about how we managed our team early to make sure that they had a good experience, number one, and that we addressed the need of being able to retain them. So we also made sure that we educated them really well, because there's a lot of different ways to lose players. The quickest of which is for them to get in trouble and do something that is detrimental to their brand, us, or their person. So we do a ton of education, which that is part of what coaching is anyway. But we do a lot of things to educate our players to make sure that we stay off of those lists, that we don't have any of our guys fall prey to that. That's all part of retainment.
Yeah.
And that's a good rule. You shouldn't have a bunch of guys that get in a lot of trouble and be able to benefit from it, right? So that's the rule that we also had to pay attention to, that because that's another way you lose players. So those were some of the things that we thought were really big challenges, but we thought we had a good plan for, and we've been able to do that well.
You have a lot of roots in Texas, spent a lot of time here in Texas, and do you find that recruiting in Kansas from the state of Texas has been a big challenge for you, or how has that worked out so far?
Well, you know, fortunately, I was a high school head coach for a number of years. I was a high school coach for a number of years before I got into college coaching, and one of the things that experience taught me was the value of those high school coaches, and understanding that when we had recruiters come through and we had guys come through from schools, there were the guys that you saw when you had a player, and then there were the guys that you saw every year, no matter what. And you knew they were developing real relationships. And that's the thing that we said when we got to Kansas, was we're going to hit the door of every high school in this state every year. We're going to call it the Kansas Blast, and we're going to make it the biggest deal in the state of Kansas.
Yeah.
And we're going to address the fact that they have not had great representation from their own flagship university. We can do one of two things. We can gripe, complain, and moan about it, or we can work to change it, right? And that work to change it was every year being in those schools and letting those guys get to know us and why you should entrust your guys to us at the University of Kansas. It's your school. Why should you want them to come there? And the reason you should is because you know those men, right? I know this. I've got two daughters, and they're my family treasures, and I'm not sending them off to just anyone.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to know those people,
right?
And that's how people are. So as coaches, we feel all these kids are our babies. So high school coaches, I wasn't just sending them anywhere. I knew Bob Stoops. I mean, yeah. I knew Mike Gundy. I knew Coach Leach. And I knew those guys were going to take care of their kids, my kids, like they were their own. I knew they were going to hold them accountable. I knew that if something was out of whack, they were going to get kicked off for a reason, and that was going to be a lesson that might save their life. I trusted them, but I knew them because I saw them every year, right? And that was the attack that we made on our state. And I'm really pleased with the relationships that we made in that state. And that's not something you do overnight. You do it every year. And the Kansas Blast has been great. We went to schools that didn't even have football. We didn't even know it.
Wow.
We've got the secretaries calling us, Coach, when are y'all coming by? Well, y'all don't play football. Well, we loved having y'all come by. So we're like, okay, we'll be there. And,
yeah.
You know, we believe that those that are willing to do a little bit more are the ones that own the world.
Sounds like you're sowing those seeds, Coach.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's something that's built over time. You don't do that overnight.
Yeah, no doubt. Coach David Beatty, head coach of Kansas football, joining us right now. Coach, I was just talking about how many head coaches in the Big 12 call their own plays. You have experiences that as well. You still call your own plays?
I do not. You know,
you
we
not?
Have Doug Meacham there.
Okay.
That
yeah.
is, you know, the former TCU offense coordinator, and he calls our offense now.
Okay.
I am involved in things schematically daily. I'm very involved and very involved with Doug. He's one of the greatest minds, I think, in college football. It's a pleasure to have him on our staff, and we're really best friends. He's such a good man and a good friend. But I take my hat off to those that do it, because I think it's very, very difficult. These jobs are very they're very demanding in other ways. And, you know, one of my best friends is Tom Herman. He and I coached together at Rice, and we've kind of come up in the business together. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about not too long ago was how difficult it is to stay really in it throughout the week like you need to be in it. Something always seems to be pulling you out of that room. And even when you tell people not to come get you, they have to. Somebody has to answer the question about why we don't have any paper clips.
That goes all the way to the top, right, Coach? That's serious.
But he I think he does such a good job. And he's earned everything he's gotten. You know, one of the things I'll tell a quick story about Tom that I always respected, you know, he got to Texas because he was working at, I believe, UC Davis, if I'm not mistaken. And he said that he went to Goodwill and bought every baby shoe he could find. And he mailed a baby shoe to every head coach in the country. And on his letter, he just said, "My name is Tom Herman, and I'm just trying to get a little foot in the door."
That's great. That is fantastic.
Now, I'm not going to admit this, but, you know, I know he's a Mensa member and all that, but he is a really, really smart guy, and he's just willing to do more. And he's a dear friend. I love him to death. His family and I were very, very close. And I'm really happy. You know, I'm from Texas. I'm happy for Texas that Texas is on their way back under him, because Texas needs to be good in Big 12. And I'm excited for them. They got a good man there.
Obviously, one more, Coach. I know you're making the rounds. We appreciate the time. If you could tell me, what do you think your biggest strengths are as a football team this year in the Big 12?
Well, I think the biggest thing is all the returners we have. We return more people than anybody in the Big 12. We return more than most in the country. That hasn't been the case. We had 8 seniors last year.
Talk about retainment. Yeah.
We had 8 seniors. There was a class that essentially didn't. There's 2 classes that essentially just didn't exist when we got there.
Wow.
When you're down 50 people, man, that's tough sledding. But you can do one of two things. You can gripe and complain, or you can figure out how to fix it. And that's what we've been adopting as our deal, is we're going to fix this thing because we love KU. We love the stakeholders. Our fans deserve more. And, listen, they can criticize us, we're going to show up and do the work. They can praise us, we're going to show up and do the work. They can not talk about us, you can talk about us. But we're going to show up and do the work.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Texas fans know that all too well. Hey, Coach, we appreciate the time. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, man. Right. And you were a good player, man.
Hey, I appreciate that, Coach. Thank you again. All right, that is Coach David Beatty. We'll be right back. We'll take a break here. This is The Horn live from Big 12 Media Days here at the Star in Frisco, brought to you by our good friends at Reliable Automotive. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. I do want to thank head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks, David Beatty, for joining us. That was pretty cool. I got to tell you, I didn't bring up the Texas game, but you can see he didn't even want me to compliment him on the Texas game. Made him feel a little awkward. He's like, no, I don't want to jinx it. You know what I mean? We'll just Kansas football. I don't want to brag about that, but Longhorn fans know all too well that David Beatty at least has got a couple of signature wins to show that he's on the right path with that Kansas Jayhawks football program. Of course, all throughout the day, there'll be different guests. They're just joining us here at the Star at Frisco for Big 12 Media Day. My man Aaron Hogan got David Beatty in here, so I appreciate that. And I've heard rumors that, you know, Lincoln Riley's making the rounds, so Lincoln Riley may join us at one point. That may be really fun. So there'll be different guests all throughout the show. They'll just stop me, interrupt me, and gladly so, I will stop everything, and then we will have a nice conversation. In the meantime, though, we're talking a ton of Texas football leading up to Big 12 Media Days. I was just talking about head coaches who call their own plays, and how Tom Herman may have to be one of those coaches, unfortunately, this year if things don't go right for Texas. But something else that, you know, we haven't talked a ton about, but of course, it's been a big topic of conversation lately. The Texas defense this year has, you know, sustained a lot of losses. Lost Malik Jefferson. Lost Deshaun Elliott. Lost Houghton Hill.
I think long ball Dixon, you consider how he flips the field, more of a weapon for the defense. You lost Puna Ford. You really lost. You could argue that there are more losses this year for the Texas defense than you had in 2011 after that Manny Diaz first year where you lose Blake Gideon, you lose Keyston Randall, you lose Keenan Robinson, you lose Emmanuel Acho, right up the central nervous system of that defense, inside linebacker, safety, and D-tackle. And the same thing happened in 2013, after that first Vance Bedford season, 2014, excuse me, after that first Vance Bedford season, you lose Jordan Hicks, you lose Steve Edmond, you lose Quandre Diggs, I think Mikael Thompson was on that defense. You lose a lot of key pieces with that group as well. Of course, I think Malcolm Brown was the D-tackle with that group. So you're talking about, once again, right up the central nervous system of that defense, you have significant losses. That's what leads to the precipitous drop-off in scoring defense and total defense and all these different areas for Texas. So we've seen this cycle. All right, for first-year defensive coordinators for Todd Orlando, most of us, including myself, believe it's going to be different, but there is no doubt he sustained as significant losses as those two prior defensive coordinators, if not more, considering what Puna Ford meant. You know, Puna Ford, I was throwing a stat out there about Puna Ford. Texas had a 27% stuff rate last year, which was better than Alabama's. That stuff rate for Texas, that basically meant that 27% of all the runs against Texas last year were stopped at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. Now, think about how good your defense could be if more than a quarter of the runs against your defense stopped at the line of scrimmage or behind it. Most of that was Puna Ford. He didn't do it, you know, in the stat column, but you watched the way he was able to penetrate, reset the line of scrimmage. That was all Puna. He's a bumblebee. He's a freak of nature. And then after that, you got Malik Jefferson that can come clean up the trash. Deshaun Elliott having a career year as a Thorpe Award finalist. Houghton Hill playing like one of the best players in the country. So even with all those losses, I think a lot of people are really high on Texas defense this year. But the problem is Texas defense this year has to make an improvement. They have to get better than last year. Now, that can happen because you have guys that now have familiarity with the scheme. Todd Orlando now has more time with those guys to teach them the scheme. So there are a lot of different reasons why it could trend upward for the Texas defense. But much like the Texas season this year and much like the Big 12, it's a lot of boom or bust within, you know, that defense, within the parameters of what they can do. And if you look back over the history of the Big 12, it's pretty obvious that the team that has a really good defense has a chance to win it, because it's so rare for you to have a great defense in the Big 12. We just don't see it a lot. Even looking back at Texas's history, take the history of the Big 12 most recently. Say in the last 13 years in the Big 12. Big 12 has only had five top 10 scoring defenses in the last 13 years, five of them. Hell, in my 3 years as a starter in the Big 12, we were a top 10 scoring defense all 3 years, I believe. Different Big 12, totally understand that. But even looking at the Pac-12, which is considered an underwhelming, lackluster defensive league, they've had a top 10 scoring defense 4 out of the last 7 years. You know, and that's with Stanford and Washington. That's not even including USC, because USC is a blue blood like Texas that is down. So the Pac-12, you could argue, has a better defensive culture than the Big 12, which is unfortunate. And it hurts the Big 12 at a lot of levels. It hurts them at the NFL level. They don't get as much respect as, you know, other conferences in terms of their defensive prospects who are coming out in the draft. I think it hurts, really, I think it hurts recruiting, too. High-caliber defensive players may not want to come to the Big 12, instead go to the SEC or the Big 10, because those guys have a better track record of getting defensive players drafted in a better defensive culture. So Todd Orlando actually is fighting against it's kind of a tidal wave of offensive culture in the Big 12. He's got to fighting an uphill battle. But in order for Texas to be really good, if you're Texas, your standards, your expectation level shouldn't be necessarily the expectation level of just competing in the Big 12. You're a blue blood. It should be trying to get back to a national championship level of play and national championship contention. If you go look, the last time Texas was ranked as a top 20 defense, not even top 10. Top 10 makes you elite. Top 20 makes you a great defense. The last time Texas was in the top 20 of defense, a scoring defense, mind you, 2008, they were 18th. And 2009, they were 12th. In 2005, they were 9th. 2004, they were 18th. So the last, the only time they were top 10 in scoring defense for Texas was 2005 when they won a national title. That is not a coincidence. And in 2004, they were a top 20 defense, and yet Texas went to a BCS game. Not a coincidence. OU was number 9 in 2004, and that's part of the reason they beat Texas. As the defensive culture has deteriorated and decayed in the Big 12, it's, you could argue Texas being down has hurt the defensive culture, because Texas is one of the only programs that can recruit elite defensive personnel and play high-caliber championship-level defense. Only Texas, really, in Oklahoma. It's amazing that Gary Patterson at TCU can play championship-level defense, because if you look at the recent history of college football, you can play – you can play elite offense and score a lot of points without NFL caliber talent. Texas Tech does it all the time. So does Washington State, where the hell Mike Leach goes. And if you go look at Texas Tech, they can do it too. So there are a lot of schemes, even Chip Kelly at Oregon, plenty of schemes out there. Go look what Scott Frost did. They can score points without necessarily elite personnel. If you want to play great defense, though, elite defense, you need talent to do it. You can't play elite defense with a bunch of scrubs like you can play offense with a bunch of jags on the field with a really great scheme. You can do that in the Big 12. It's been proven. Go look at Baylor. Go look at what Texas Tech has done. You want to play elite-level defense, you got to have star power to do it. You got to have NFL-caliber guys. You got to have all-conference-caliber guys. And that's why Texas was able to do it in 05. And in 09, they were 12th in scoring defense in the country. Go look at the talent level. Look how many NFL players on that defense, probably 7 or 8 that I can count at the top of my head. And that's not even considering the depth. That's just the starters. So the last time Texas had a top 15 defense, 2009, they went to the national title. Before that, it was 2005. They were number 9. They won the national title. Last time they had a top 20 defense, 2004 and 2008. Both went to BCS games during that time period just because they were on the fringe of being in the top 10. All right, so that's Todd Orlando's – that is his task. That's right now, that is his biggest conundrum. I know it sounds like you're a spoiled fan base saying last year Texas was in total defense. I believe Texas was 29th in scoring defense last year. To go from 29th to, 15th, or to go to top 10, that's what we're asking. But until that happens, Texas won't be in a national championship conversation. They'll be in the Big 12 title conversation, but hell, nobody in the Big 12 plays respectable defense in most people's eyes. Only TCU and Texas and Oklahoma even come close to it. K-State's in that conversation, too. I'll take that back. K-State's in that conversation, but not year after year. And Texas has to get back there. One thing, look, and if you go look at the last time, and even Texas in 2014 when they had a really good defense, they were only 31st in scoring defense. 2011 when they were really good under Manny Diaz, they were only 33rd in scoring defense. That's really good. That's not great, and it's not elite. In order for Texas to be back to a championship conversation, they got to be great to elite there. And we'll go to the offensive side of the ball later, but just looking at defense, that's what Todd Orlando's got to do. You go look at the national championship winners the last, just in the Nick Saban era, I guess you could go back. Since he won his first championship at LSU, they had the number one scoring defense. USC the next year, number two scoring defense. 05 Texas, number 9 scoring defense. 06 Florida, number 6 scoring defense. 07 LSU, they were an outlier. They were number 17. I don't know how that happens. 08 Florida, number 4. 09 Bama, number 2. Auburn, Cam Newton's Auburn Tigers were an outlier. 53rd scoring defense. 2011 Alabama, number 1. 2012 Alabama, number 2. Florida State, 2013, number 1. Ohio State, in 2014, 19. That was an outlier, though. Remember, they won the national title with their third-string quarterback. Bama in 2015, number 2. 2016, Clemson was number 11, right on the fringe of being the top 10. Still an elite defense. 2017, Bama was number 1. It ain't chess. You know what I mean? Like, it's checkers. It's pretty simple. And that's what Todd Orlando is being paid the big bucks for. Now, if Texas offense can't even get back to legitimacy and just get back to being average, then they'll drag that defense down with them. But that's going to be a hell of a Herculean task in the Big 12 for Todd Orlando. Because remember what Lincoln Riley said about Georgia. If they were playing in the Big 12, there's no way that they would have a top five defense year after year. It's kind of one of the things when keeping it real goes wrong, because we all know he's right. There's no question he's right about that. But you don't really have that, you know, you don't, we can't make that, we can't really make that something that we can prove in some type of scientific experiment, but it makes common sense. And if that is the case, I wonder if Todd Orlando can bring Texas back to being an elite defense in a conference that is lopsided so offensively. All right, we'll come back. We can talk more about the defense a little bit later on. We'll talk a little quarterback when we come back. We'll get into who I think is the darkest of dark horses in the Big 12 this year. And in one of the, honestly, the most boom or bust years in Big 12 history. We'll come back and get into that, all that and more right here on the broadcast live from Big 12 Media Days here at the Star in Frisco, courtesy of our friends at Reliable Automotive. We'll be right back. Back to the broadcast, hanging out here at Big 12 Media Days at the Star in Frisco. Let me just give, and courtesy of our good friends at Reliable Automotive, by the way. So shout out to Reliable Automotive and all their support. But I got to tell you, Jerry Jones, what he's done with this this place, this venue here, it's indescribable. There's really nothing like it. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. They're like restaurants and like bars on the walk up. Then there's the Omni Hotel right here. There's some people that are just here having like lunch, just hanging out. There's some women like they're coming out of a spa somewhere down there. I mean, it is just, there's like a football field where kids are playing out front. Hell, we should have bought the football so we could have tossed it around in here on the field. I guarantee you next year guys are bringing football because there's plenty of room to get a little game of catch going on. But Jerry Jones is a marketing genius. There are some people that just have a marketing mind. Remember when Jerry Jones had to put up his own money for Jerry World because nobody in during the 2008 debacle, and trust me, I lost half of my net worth like most of y'all in 2008, but nobody had the vision to invest with Jerry Jones, so he put up his own money, and then I think he paid it off, I don't know, in 5 or 6 years, and now he's making straight profit. It's a venue for concerts and boxing and basketball and everything else, and at the time, people thought he was crazy. It was like, nobody's going to go to that monstrosity and pay $70 parking to go hang out and pay, I don't know, $150 go hang out in some club, standing room only. Yeah, they will. All right? So Jerry Jones, proven once again, he's just smarter than the rest of us. Really? Jerry Jones and the Kardashians, we should learn lessons from. Really, the Jenners, Kardashian/Jenners. The article in Forbes that Kylie Jenner is about to be a billionaire, because she's worth $900 million because of her cosmetic line and her new lip line and everything. And we all know the beauty of the Kardashians is they're rich and famous without having any real discernible talent. And that's the American dream. Don't we all want to get rich and famous without necessarily doing anything? That's what marketing will get you, a great marketing mind. like the Jenners and the Kardashians. Kim Kardashian is rich and famous because of a sex tape now flipped and marketed and commoditized and monetized. And Kendall Jenner, the only reason we know her is because of Kim Kardashian sex tape. That's how you milk something for everything it's worth. And Jerry Jones knows how to do it really well. That's marketing 101, kids. All right, so learn from the best. All right, we'll come back to a conversation about the Texas defense. Also, we may be joined by some special guests all throughout the show. But I was talking earlier about the optimism surrounding Texas, and everybody's really optimistic about Texas this year. The Vegas Wise Guys, we've given you all the numbers about, you know, the Las Vegas Superbook, I think, has Texas at 8.5 wins. Even Joe Klatt sat down with BK and Trey, and he was really high on Texas and talked about how, you know, anything could happen. The ESPN Football Power Index has Texas winning 8.5, almost 9 games if you round up. So many different entities, so many different organizations are really high on Texas. I think a lot of it is due to Tom Herman because the quarterback situation is uncertain. We don't really know what's going to happen with the quarterback situation. But yet everybody's still high on Texas. I think a lot of that is the faith that people have in Tom Herman, that he can get things turned around in Texas. And last year you saw a lot of signs pointing to that, right? You saw Tom Herman, you know, get a team ready to play against USC on the road, a really young team that played that top 10 team, played them down to the wire. Same thing with Oklahoma. Same thing with Oklahoma State. Those were all ranked teams, top 15 teams that Texas played down to the wire. But on the other side of that, there was some games where Texas struggled, and maybe they shouldn't have struggled. Of course, losing to Texas Tech, losing to Maryland. Can't lose those games. The teams you're supposed to beat. You beat one of those teams, you're an 8-win team. You beat two of those teams, and that's 9 wins for Tom Herman in his first year. You caught Iowa State at a good time before Kyle Kemp became the starting quarterback for them, and they went on a bit of a run. Knocked Will Grier out of the game on the road at West Virginia. Those are all things where the football gods are shining upon you. So last year could have went really, really bad, or it could have went, 9-win good. At the end of the season, I think Longhorn fans were upset after that Texas Tech loss because they are who we thought they were, essentially. Texas was the same team at the beginning of the year, all right, losing to Maryland, that they were at the end of the year when they lost to Texas Tech. And ultimately, that's why the Texas Bowl, excuse me, was the best win of the year for Texas. It was the best win of the year. Wasn't even close. Best win of the year, best performance of the year. They were down, no Houghton Hill, no Deshaun Elliott, no Malik Jefferson. So a lot of guys didn't play. Hell, the game was so weird and so bizarre that the punter ended up being the MVP of the game. You just had to go out and try to beat one of the best offenses in the country, a top 10 offense, with a quarterback who's considered to be a future NFL prospect. And Tom Herman had to go out with a lot of guts and a lot of testicular fortitude, as I call it, and inspire his players. And he did that, the quarterback situation. He rolled some things around, maneuvered some things, and was able to get the W for Texas. And I think that, ending on that note, I think also blew a lot of people away. Like, oh, man, Texas was expected to lose that game. Even, I think, Longhorn fans were pessimistic about, all the losses on defense and still going into the game and winning against Missouri, which was one of the better offenses in the country. That's why we're high on Todd Orlando. That win was big in terms of the perception of the trajectory of Texas. All right? I think that's why Todd Orlando earned a lot of street cred. Tom Herman kind of confirmed what people know about Tom Herman. He's a big game coach. All right? Good in the big games. In the non-conference, big in the the big games, even in conference. Actually, the Texas Longhorns had a harder time showing up for the games that were not on such a big stage. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, USC showed up. Hell, what they didn't show up was Texas Tech and Maryland. You know what I mean? So he's a big game coach. I think Longhorn fans like him. I think that's what the Vegas Wise Guys are seeing, and that's why they're so optimistic. And also, we know how the second-year coach, there's a second-year coach thing. Especially, it's really not a second-year coach thing. It's a blue-blood thing. When you're at a blue-blood football program, you hire the right coach at a blue-blood football program, it takes about 2 or 3 years to turn it around. And we've seen so many examples of it from Pete Carroll at USC, 6-6 in his first year, 11-2 in his second year, national title in his third year, Bob Stoops wins a national title in his second year, Urban Meyer, national title in his second year, James Franklin at Penn State, 7-6 in his first 2 years, 11-3 in his third year, Chris Peterson at Washington, 8-6, 7-6 then, he's 12-2 and 10-3, Clay Helton at USC, 5-4, all right, his first year, 10-3 in his second year, Mark Richt, Kirby Smart, Georgia, at 8-5 his first year, 13-2 his second year. Gus Malzahn. We've seen so many second-year turnarounds at blue-blood college football programs that the truth is once you get a blue-blood turnaround, it's such a gargantuan mammoth beast. It's like turning around the Titanic, all right? It's like turning around a fuel line or like one of those big ocean tankers. But once you get it turned around, once you get the momentum going in the right place, right, we're in the right direction, then it can all be kind of going downhill. It took Mac Brown a little while to do. Hell, look at Mac Brown's second year. You know what I mean? Mac Brown's second year, I think he's playing in a Big 12 title. That, in his third year, Mac Brown's close to winning 11 games. So I think that's what people are looking at. That's why they're so optimistic about Texas. And I would be, too. I mean, I think second year for Tom Herman, it's not outrageous. I got him at 9 wins. I think a lot of people got him at 8 to 9 wins. But in the Big 12, hell, anything could happen. All right, we'll come back. We will start getting into some other teams in the Big 12, not just Texas. I'll tell you who I think the dark horse is in this Big 12 season. Also, we might have some special guests coming up, sitting down with us to conversate about the Big 12 and the Big 12 media days. All that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260.